Ronananian.
You've got to face up to it. You got to fix the car in front of you, and you can't get aggravated about it.
After 6 hours of school, I had enough of the day. I hit the radio dial, turned it up all the way. I got a dance.
Car doctor.
I bought a 2001 Cabrio. I looked up on the Kelley Blue Book value. It's a $3,700 if it's working right.
Right. What'd you pay for this?
$450.
Okay, so you got what you paid for.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
Galveston, oh Galveston.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
Southern nights. Have you ever felt a southern night? Like a rhinestone cowboy getting cards and letters from people I don't even know, and offers coming over.
Hello, start your engines. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. The phone number is 855. Oh, will you stop with the happy birthday already? Jeez, who told you guys?
Facebook.
Yeah, that's... Oh, that's right. You know, I didn't want to mention it to anybody.
Listen, you're going to be glad that God is allowing you to see another birthday, so embrace it.
You know, I thought about it from that perspective, but I thought it also said that God realizes that there's too many broken cars down here, and he's got to keep me around for a little while yet.
Now, isn't this the 30th anniversary of your 30th birthday, give or take?
This is actually the 31st anniversary of my 30th birthday.
Okay, good.
I'm like ancient today. But as I like to say, and as I tried to point out to a young man on Facebook this morning, I've forgotten more than you know. So, dude, back up the truck a little bit. That's a whole nother story. Ron Ananian, the car doctor. I'm sorry, let me get back on cue here. The phone number is 855-560-9900, 24/7, round the clock. Because if you call 855-560-9900, Motorhead Matt will call you back and put you in the queue for the next live broadcast. We are live on the radio network Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. And we go out on the affiliates, a couple of affiliates take us live, some of the affiliates take us on delay. And, of course, there's podcasting available, cardoctorshow.com, as always. Some changes coming to podcasting, don't want to talk too much about it, but just make sure you pay attention to cardoctorshow.com in the coming weeks for those changes as we continue to try and bring you a better product and more informative about your automobile and what's going on. To that point, a couple of posts up on Facebook this week. Some of them were fun. I took Black out this week. Black 2, I came in on Wednesday morning and said, get me out from under the cover. And I said, okay. So I pulled it out and started up, and I let it run for a little bit. And we went out for a cruise Wednesday night and kind of annoyed everybody, and found out that at about 5,700 RPM, second gear, hard pull, it's starting to break up. And I have a sort of suspicion that the rev limiter, which is supposed to be set much, much higher, is acting up and creating an issue. So I've got to get deeper into the confines of an MSD distributor coming up this week. So we'll look forward to that. And another post up there on Facebook is really the one I want to talk about to you. Had a 2005 Chrysler 300 came into the shop, and I mean months ago. It was like, just get to it when you can. And we've been very busy. It's been a very busy first half of the year. And the last 2 months, I've finally been able to put my focus on it and get into it, because the car has just got a pile of problems. And I think I might have commented on some of them in previous shows in what's going on with this car. And the first is that it won't shift out of first gear. It has ABS warning lights on. It has multiple codes in different areas, the predominant of which, and the most of which, is the ABS problems. It's reporting problems with the left rear sensor, the right rear ABS sensor, and it's reporting what appears to be a generic 500 series code for the ABS controller and speed signal. Sometimes knowing too much hurts you, because I knew too much. The customer informed me that the car had sat for 2.5, almost 3 years. Well, they think it only sat for 6 months, but when I look at some of the indicators and the amount of rust and the way the rotors rusted up and just general overall status of the car, I went, nah, this is like a 2-year sit. This car sat a long time. And knowing that, it skews your judgment. I got to be honest. It makes you look in places that you don't really need to look. Because it comes back to what my college professor has always said, keep it simple, sir. And, well, in my case, it was stupid, but I'm trying to be polite. So, you know, you can overthink the problem. And what it really came back to was, look, you've got an ABS system. You've got some sort of a wheel speed signal or sensor coming out of each corner. Wheel speed sensor is creating the signal. And what's missing? Now, Chrysler... And this is where I think Chrysler missed the point about keep it simple, stupid. It used to be that an ABS signal, in a lot of cases, I wouldn't say all the time, it was a toothed ring. You ever look at the top of a castle, the fort, it's like notched, you know, that it got a high and a low and a high and a low. It's a square top, right? Square wave top. That's what the scope pattern would look like if you ever wave out certain things, digital signal on, digital signal off, that type of thing. And that toothed pattern would go up against an AC voltage generator, and it would generate an AC signal. It would be like a pickup coil inside a distributor back in the 70s and the 80s, GM, HEI, and Ford, and so forth come to mind. Chrysler said, no, you know, we've been doing it this way for so long, and we've got a better way to do it. We're going to put a magnet on the end of the axle. We're going to get away with the tooth ring, get away from the tooth ring. We're going to put a magnet there. And when the magnet passes over or under the sensor and the north-south end of the magnet pass and the polarity changes, we're going to induce a voltage, and that's how we're going to tell how fast the wheel's going. Yeah, because nothing will go wrong with that. I mean, what could go wrong with that? Let me tell you what went wrong with that. So the car sat for 2 years. Did I tell you it sat a long time? And that's what you'll see in the pictures if you get out to the Facebook page, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. And I didn't see it the first time through. I actually didn't see it until I got the axle out of the car. I saw it on the scope, but I didn't know what I was looking at. And that's where I say sometimes knowing too much can distract you. I just knew it wasn't right, and I said the axle's got to come apart. The scope pattern was jumping. Had a nice voltage. It put out specs, sort of, not really. You know, it was a minimal voltage pattern. We want to see 3, and this is what we're dealing with. We want to see 3 to 8 tenths of a volt DC voltage. And we were seeing less than a 3, just maybe it hit the 3 tenths. It was just the minimum. It was just like enough, but not you're like, wow, is it, you know, could it be any lazier? Reminded me of a relative I used to know. But he's not here anymore. And I said, you know, there's just something here because I'm watching the signal go boop, boop, boop. Why is it bouncing like that? Got to pull the axle out. Well, to take the axle out of the rear corner of this 2005 Chrysler 300C, you know, they may have had a shortage of ABS sensors and tone rings back in 2005. They didn't have a shortage of nuts and bolts. All right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There were 6 nuts and bolts holding between the sway bar link, the lower ball joint, the upper cross member, the lower cross member. I mean, the guy was nut and bolt happy. He must have thought the wheel was going to fall off. I'm not really quite sure why he did it. But everything is rusty and gnarly and cobwebs and spiders. And it was like working on Eddie Munster's car. And you just sit there and you say, why? Why does it have to be so complicated? And you get the knuckle out, or you get the knuckle off, and the steel bolts that hold the brake caliper on going into the aluminum knuckle, you're trying to walk them out and not gall anything, and you're tearing the aluminum out of the knuckle, and you're like, okay, that's going to get a helicoil or a time cert going back in, because you're creating work. Maybe that's what Chrysler's idea was. They wanted to, you know, they're just trying to create things for them to do so they can justify their existence. You get the axle out of the car, and you lay it on the ground, and you look at it, and you don't see it, and it's really rusty on the end, but you know you're looking for something because you're a mechanic and you're trying to get into something simple. You know, it's got to be something staring me in the face. And sure enough, you look at it, and the video I put up on Facebook, you'll see it pretty clear because I kind of cleared some of the rust away. But when I pulled it out, it was really masked over because you couldn't see it. The magnet had cracked. There was a crack clean through the magnet. What happened? Remember 7th grade science class? What happens when you crack the magnet? You now created two magnets, right? It was you had two different poles and two different polarities. Everything changes. And that's why the scope pattern was so cockeyed, because I was seeing two triggers from two separate, and it was just giving me a pattern that bounced all over creation. Put a new axle in the car, assembled it, got rid of the cobwebs, took the car around the block, and I'm happy to report that the car finally upshifted the transmission. Dogged me off and on for the better part of 3 weeks. But I just kept saying, there's got to be something simple here. I'm missing something so obvious. What am I missing? And the point of the story becomes, you know, just don't overthink it. I was reminded of that once again this week. Never overthink the problem, but always look for something basic. And expect the unexpected. I don't think I've ever seen I've never seen a magnet do that, but I don't think I've ever seen a car rust like that and still want to be driven, I guess is the point, because most people would scrap the car. There's an emotional attachment to this vehicle, and I understand that, and I made a promise that I would get to the bottom of it, and I did. So, but anyway, that's the story. Get out to the Facebook page, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. You can look at the video. It probably explains it maybe a little bit more than I did, a little simpler than I did. I wanted to try and get into a little bit of depth here. But, you know, it spurs another part of the conversation, and I'm going to pull over real quick in a minute, but it spurs another part of the conversation that here's technology, right? We were doing this with an AC signal generator and a toothed ring to create signal, and it worked for years and years and years, and we went to a magnet because a magnet will never break. It broke. And my point is, what we've got to realize that every time they change something in a car and we go to it and say, oh, isn't this great? This is the next best thing. Remember these words. When's it going to break and who's going to fix it? And that's the key to understanding and having a relationship with your car, because I don't care what it is. Sooner or later, it's going to come see me. I'm Ron and Annie in the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We'll be back right after this. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900, cardoctorshow.com for more information and fun facts. Let's go over and talk to Bob, Phillipsburg, New Jersey. Longtime listener, Mr. Schumacher. How the heck are you? How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Ron. I'm finally glad to be able to talk to you. My hearing kind of went south, and I finally got hearing aids, and the hearing aids coupled through the iPhone, and I could hear you loud and clear.
That's not from that performance loud exhaust on that Volkswagen you used to drive, is it?
Yeah, maybe it is.
Is that what it is?
You know, it's amazing. You know, when your hearing goes and you can't hear sounds, it's kind of difficult to troubleshoot.
Oh yeah, well, it's handy though if you're married. I don't want to point that out too loud. There's a lot of married guys, a lot of wives in the audience. So don't pretend I didn't say that. So anyway, how can I help you today?
Okay.
How can I help you today?
Yeah. What's the life cycle of shocks and struts? I guess it depends on the roads and stuff, though. But
yeah.
I
think it depends on the roads. I think it depends on the environment. I think it depends on what part of the country. I think it depends on what we're driving. I think it depends on your budget. I think there's a lot of factors. You know, it's not clearly mileage dependent. My 2008 Chevy one-ton pickup truck, my plow truck's got 31,000 miles and change on it, and it's been through two sets of front shocks, and it's about to go through a third. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, the plow goes up, the plow goes down, I hit every pothole that I try to avoid. You know, it happens. You know, what kind of car are we talking about here, Bob?
It's just the 2008 Audi A3.
Oh, the Volkswagen grew up. Now you've got a big one, yeah. How many miles were on it?
100,000.
Okay. And I know you from talking to you over the years and all, and I know what you're looking for. And I've got to think that, you know, you're kind of looking for it to feel tight, and how close back to the factory can you? And you know, I think that if you wish to replace shocks and struts all the way around, and maybe think about springs, and you know, because that to me is the missing piece. That's the piece of the puzzle everybody tends to either ignore or forget about. You know, if the shocks have taken a beat and so have the springs, And, you know, I'm sure there's more than enough kits out there where manufacturers will sell shock and strut or shock, strut, spring assemblies together as a set. And, you know, put a match set of suspension in the car and see what it does. And then you'll have some more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about going back to OEM and get the stuff from Audi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
that way, I mean, at least puts the car back the way it was new.
Right. Well, either that or, and I mean, I'm sure there were Bilsteins in that new would be my guess. Bilstein or Coney. I'm not sure if I'm dating myself there saying the Coney word. But I would also tell you to go and look. I mean, the suspension technology is scary, what's out there. It's crazy. I started looking at, I just purchased a 72 Monte Carlo this year, and I'm playing around reliving my college days. And
wow.
You know, and I started
That's
looking
great.
At, yeah, let's do some suspension to that, you know, and you started adding it up. And, you know, $6,000 later, I can make a 72 Monte Carlo go around a corner at 90 like it's riding on rails. You know, I don't know how my kidneys are going to feel about that. And,
right.
You know, and you know, never mind the checkbook. You know, and to that point, what I decided was I'm going to put the car together the way I did when I was a college kid on a budget. Heavier springs front and back, right from move.
Yeah.
You know, the strongest set of what I'll call factory gas shocks I can find. I'm actually going to put a set of Monroes in it, or the equivalent, because they don't make Monroe Gasmatics or Radiomatics anymore. I'm going to put the equivalent of that. And
yeah.
I'm just going to drive it. And,
yeah.
You know, I put a factory sway bar in the front, an inch and a quarter bar in the front, an inch bar in the rear, and we'll see how it handles. I mean, listen, it used to scare me when I was 19. I figured it's got to do a whole lot more now at this age.
And you were doing this with bias-ply tires, too.
Well, no, actually, that was right around the time. I'm not that old, Bob. It was right around the time when BF Goodrich radial TAs had come to market.
Yeah.
And you know, I was hanging those on it. I will tell you this, though. I used to be able to go into the corner so hard, I would actually break the spot weld on the bottom of the shock, the front.
Wow.
And I would unwind the steel clamp that went around the bushing. I kept returning him to the Monroe guy. If he's listening to this show today, I'm sorry. But, you know, I would actually, every 6 to 8 months, I would return the front shocks. I would break the strap. He goes, how do you keep breaking the weld? I don't know. I guess they're defective. You know, but what can I tell you? I was like, you know what? Young and dumb. You do those things. But my point is, before you just consign yourself all by factory stuff, take a look at some of the aftermarket stuff. There's a lot of performance suspension out there. There's a lot of engineering and research that's gone into this. And, you know, it's not that it won't be fun to drive in stock trim, but it might be even more fun. Might be even more fun to drive, you know, with a little bit of juice in it.
So, yeah, well, this DSC transmission, you can launch the tires real easy.
Yeah, and, you know, have some fun in the meantime. Bob, it was great to catch up. You know, by all means, keep us in the loop and let us know what you decide. And we're talking about going to Labor Day, you know, the event up there in Mahwah on Labor Day. We're talking about that, so maybe we'll see you up there if we end up going. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We will be back right after this. Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. And let me point out, if you've got a car problem, you've got a question, you've got something that's kind of on your mind, automotive related, and you want to talk about it, you give me a call. Leave a message if the show's not on the air. And 855-560-9900 during off-show hours leads right to my executive private locked up super secure mailbox. And it gets answered by none other, by the next up-and-coming executive producer to the world of radio, by Motorhead Matt, who will astound you with his lack of knowledge about automobiles and just what exactly he knows. Now, you give that him a call and you try that out and say, yes, Tony, you have a comment? I don't hear you, Tony. Push the on button.
You are talking about Matchbox cars, right?
Yeah, regular Matchbox cars. Well, I didn't say what kind of cars he knows about, but he, you know, Motorhead Matt knows about some kind of cars. No, the last producer knew about Matchbox cars, didn't he? But it depends if he found them in a garage sale or not. So, and that was the key. So, to be renamed nameless. Let's go over and talk to Jason, Colorado. Jason, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help? What's going on?
Hi. I've got a 2006 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo that has intermittent no start.
Okay.
And it's crazy. Like, it almost seems temperature related, which is so weird. During the winter, you know, and it gets pretty cold here consistently, it doesn't really do it. And then when we came into the warmer temperatures, I'll go to start it, and it just kind of clicks, like the solenoid's clicking.
Which engine is this, Jason? The V6 or the V8?
It's the V8. It's the 4.7.
Okay. And when you say it doesn't start, is it just clearly a click, or what does it exactly do?
It just clicks. Like, it'll just click, kind of like, you know, like the old 1980s era kind of solenoid failure on a starter.
Okay.
And, you know, you would go to turn the key, and you just kind of hear that clicking noise, and then you knew your solenoid was bad. It does the exact same thing. It just kind of makes a clicking noise. And then on the digital display where you have parked, neutral, reverse drive, before it starts clicking, you know, it'll just have the park indicator highlighted. And then when it starts clicking, all those indicators light up. So it's kind of like highlighting all the indicators.
So it's going into a reset.
And then, like it kind of goes into like lockup, and
right.
When it locks up, I can't get the starter to engage. I don't get fuel, and I don't get spark.
Okay. Do you have any kind of a scan tool?
Yeah, I ran codes, and I got a P0706, I believe.
Range switch performance issue.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. When you looked at codes now, did you just pull generic OBD2, or did you go into year, make, model for vehicle?
It's a generic OBD2. I think it's a Bluetooth I got from Amazon.
Okay.
So I think it just does generic OBD2 stuff.
All right. So, you know, and it probably does. And OBD2 is a good place to start. We always start there in the shop. It's the place to start. But here's a case where I'd like to see when the condition exists. Maybe we've got a module dropping out. Maybe we can't talk to the instrument cluster. Maybe we can't talk to the trans module, the TCM. Maybe we can't talk to, you know, who's not on the bus anymore? Who's not communicating? Now, the starter for that's down on the right side, if memory serves me correct, and it's got the most god-awful solenoid connector with a safety on it that you ever saw. So getting it undone is a big pain in the butt. Normally I would sit there and I would tell you to go down. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's a brown or a tan wire with a trace on it, just to see, do we have signal, you know? So maybe we've got to go look at a wiring diagram. Excuse me. Go look at a wiring diagram and, you know, just check, do we have power there? Even though I understand what's going on with the dashboard. But, you know, maybe we want to treat this as a 68 Chevy, no start, bad starter solenoid. Just test for power at the starter. Do we have signal going to the solenoid? Do we, if we voltage drop the battery cable, both the positive and the negative cable, do we have correct voltage drop? Do we have under 3/10 of a volt across, you know, the cable, so that we know we've got good continuity? And then, you know, how's the ground at the block? How's the ground connection at the battery itself? Because you live in Colorado, if the vehicle's been there any length of time, you know, it's out in the weather and the elements, and what sort of corrosive, you know, issues might we have? Let's just eliminate.
Yeah, there's a lot of mag chloride and stuff like that.
Right. So let's eliminate simple first, okay?
Okay.
You know, even to the point that maybe what you could do is, if you can get a wiring diagram, figure out where that solenoid wire comes from, and maybe we can, you know, get to it easier up higher in the fender well, so to speak, and wire in a 194 side marker bulb socket. You know, go down to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. You got an O'Reilly Auto Parts around you?
Yeah.
Okay, and just go down and, you know what a 194 side marker bulb is, like you would use in a directional or a parking lamp? Well, they make...
Yeah, definitely.
They'll sell sockets, you know, this just like universal sockets that'll hold those bulbs for trailers and things. So go down and buy a couple of those. Look at the wiring diagram and say, let's say, I want to see what the voltage is here, and maybe I want to see what the voltage is there. Wire in the side markers, wire in the bulbs. All right? We do this with customers. We've done this where we put the bulbs in the glove compartment or under the dash, and we'll put different colored bulbs into each socket. You know, we'll put a clear, we'll put a frosted, we'll put a 2-on-1, we'll put a yellow one in there, and then they'll tell us which one lit up, the yellow one. Okay, that tells us where we got to go. You know, if you go to start this and all you get is click, but that bulb is lit and you voltage dropped the system, you know that at least you've got to have a bad starter. I mean, there's just nothing else it can be.
I did have that checked. I took it to a mechanic, and that's what they thought it was. They thought it was either the battery or the starter.
Right.
And I did just have the battery replaced. So they replaced the starter, and they called me, and they're like, you know, it's good done. Come pick it up. And when I was on my way there to pick it up, they called me back, and they're like, nope, it's not the starter. Okay. You know, just give us another hour. And they actually, they couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. They didn't charge me anything. Kind of just told me, sorry. They were like, we don't know what's wrong with it. We think it's a module in the dash, but we're not sure.
Right. And that's, and I'm kind of inclined to agree with them. I just, if it's easy enough to get to the solenoid feed, I'd just like to see you do it just because we don't diagnose by replacement. Because then I can make the argument and we could have a two-hour conversation about how, you know, just because they put a new part in it doesn't mean the new part was any good. New means never, ever worked.
Exactly.
You know, so just, it's... You know, the art of the diagnosis is it eliminates known good, and at least we can get out of that. Then I'm going to tell you. That, then I'm going to tell you that I want to go and look at, you know, manufacturer specific with a scan tool, and see if you know what module is not communicating. And you know, the last thought I've got is when the problem happens, you're in park, correct?
Yeah, and I've tried moving it from park to neutral,
and no change.
Yeah, no change. It still won't start. And it shows the digital indicator will show that I'm moving it from park to neutral.
Okay.
So it's acknowledging that, but it still won't start, though.
I'd love to see what a scan tool would report. Those vehicles did have more than their fair share of shifter range problem issues. And it was the module or the switch itself, which is incorporated into it, depending upon your make and model. So I think you're going to find, looking at it on a scan tool, that when this problem happens, that the trans controller, the shifter module, the SESM, electronic shift module, doesn't communicate. It's just not going to be there. It's going to be off the bus. And that's going to tell you that that's a problem unto itself, too.
Yeah, and then the whole system just goes into lockup
right.
And it doesn't start.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, all right, so get a look at that. You know, maybe you can get your hands on a scan tool, take it back to that shop. It seems like they want to work with you. Explain to them our conversation, or if they want to hear this conversation, all they've got to do is go to cardoctorshow.com. This would be hour one on, what is today, August the 12th? August the 12th would be hour one. August the 12th, you're about three quarters of the way through. We started at the bottom of the hour. If they go to the middle of the podcast, they can hear the conversation, and maybe it'll give them some ideas. Not saying I got all the answers, but I think it's a pretty good way to attack this particular problem. All right, kiddo.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. It's very frustrating because it's like nothing wrong. You know, there's never been anything wrong with the truck. And then all of a sudden, it's just like no start. And it doesn't seem to be any reason why it won't start.
Right. And like I said, don't forget to voltage drop. You know, I everybody always thinks about the positive side of a circuit. Don't forget to voltage drop the ground. Make sure the connection at the block is good. You know, all those things come into play, and then we'll start to talk about the more complicated. I read a post somewhere, and then I got to go. I read a post somewhere in the last 2 weeks in a mechanics forum I belong to where they were going through all this diagnosis for an intermittent slow-cranking Chevy Silverado. They went through every controller on the car, every module. They looked at it. I mean, they had 4 days in this car, and the one test they missed was they never put a voltmeter or a bulb or an indicator on the solenoid feed wire going to the starter. It turns out when the problem happened, the solenoid had power, the starter was being energized, the starter made no sound, it was a bad starter all along, they changed everything else around it, so you got to look at everything. I know it's hard, but you have to. So anyway, good luck to you, Jason. Keep me in the loop, and we'll look forward to your return call, 855-560-9900. Running late, got to go. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, back right after this. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Tony, did you put that bumper in? Is that just kind of got logged in? Is that because we were just talking
happened.
About it?
Deja vu. Oh,
deja vu. So I guess I got to tell them, yes, we're going to go to the Dead Man's Curve thing up in Mahwah. And,
okay.
You know, we'll do that. I'll text them right after the show. So it's not affirmative until they say yes back, because maybe they get a good look at us and decide, no, they don't want these ugly guys showing up. But you never know. Maybe we'll be there. So chances are September the 2nd, we'll be up in Mahwah at the Dead Man's Curve event up at the Meadowlands, up at the Sheridan up there in Mahwah. So we'll get it right. Let's go and talk to David in Iowa. Which brings me to another subject. Hey, David.
Hey, I know you got a good memory, Ron. You remember that Monte Carlo I was telling you about?
Yeah, the Monte Carlo, and yeah, the one that you were trying to get running in the back of the gas station, right?
Yeah, well, this well, this was the one that had that we couldn't figure it out on the distributor or whatever that was. It was a wife's car.
Yeah. Okay, so now what's this car today? This is the Pontiac?
Well, I've got a Pontiac, but I wanted to give you a quick message on that Monte Carlo first.
Go ahead.
I got it fixed. I fixed it permanently, okay? I opened the hood and threw some dynamite in there, and I ran like hell. But it cost me more to pick up the pieces than it did to fix it.
Well, I bet it would. You know, that, did you really do that, David?
No.
Okay. I was just wondering.
That's your happy birthday gift.
Well, thank you. That's a heck of a candle, brother. So, how can I help you with the Pontiac? What's going on there?
Oh, okay. I've got a carburetor. It's a standard old Carter.
Right.
And it'll the car will run and drive for probably, I don't know, maybe around the block twice, and then it stops. Okay.
All right.
And we do it again. Let it sit for a little while. And it starts back up, and it ran a little bit more, and this time it just quit. So I hate to get under that thing and try to take out the gas tank and all that stuff and clean the lines out, but it probably might be a smart idea, don't you think?
Because, well, yeah, so what? This car's been sitting a long time?
Oh, probably for about 20 years or 30 years.
Yeah,
like that.
Dude, it's going to be all loaded with the fuel is probably turned to varnish, and you know, the fuel pump has probably been destroyed. The rubber has just been attacked. And, you know, there's 100 things to do here. What kind of Pontiac is this?
It's a Bonneville two-door hardtop.
Oh, yeah. That car's worth saving. What motor's in that? Would that have been a 389?
Yeah.
389 four-barrel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty neat car, David. It's probably worth a few bucks if you take care of it.
I know. There's not a dent in it anywhere. I mean, it's all together, and the guy I bought it from, it was original. They said they were having trouble with it, and he wanted to get rid of it, and I bought it really super reasonable.
I think
less than $1,000 for it.
That's a no-brainer, brother. Pull the gas tank, send the tank out, get it flushed. The fuel that's in there probably turned to varnish. Keep in mind that if they tell you the tank is, you know, etched or stained or something, there are kits out there from various companies that you can line the inside of the tank with. And I would tell you to do that before, you know, depending on how rusty or ugly it is, but I would tell you to do that before you just replace the tank. And then go through, blow the lines. What's it going to take? Blow the lines, put a fuel pump on it, and rebuild the carburetor.
I'm not that tight. I don't think I'll have more than I would be willing to put 15 into it just to get it to, you know, completely back to original. It's really a nice.
Yeah, sounds like it. Listen, I don't know if you can, but see if you can go out to the Car Doctor Facebook page and post a picture of it. Either that, or you can probably put a picture of it in the messaging section. I'm thinking, one way or the other. But I'd love to see a picture of it. I'm sure the other listeners would too. And you never know when you need parts for it. Maybe somebody out there's got something that's lying around.
Right.
You know, you never know.
Appreciate it, Don, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you, brother. Don. Thank you. You take good care, and always good to hear from David in Iowa. By the way, before I forget, whatever happened to the guy in Iowa with the ice cream? Remember him from, what was that, like 2 years ago that made the ice cream for us? I can't think of his name. I got to look that up. But that was really good ice cream. I wonder if he's still doing it. So if he's out there, strawberry. All right. Hey, Ron and Annie on the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We are going to cruise back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor here. Let's finish up. You know, we were off last week and playing hooky, and a week before we read Steve Rosenthal from Virginia's letter. I marked where I left off some of the comments that Steve makes. And I love Steve. He's a great guy. But some of his comments are hysterical. We were talking about different things. Steve says, hey, Michelin tires. I bought a set at Sam's Club 15 years ago for the 99 green Honda Civic. 4 years later, the right front developed a bulge around 70,000 miles. Went to the local Firestone. I've used Firestone, Bridgestone since. You see, that just proves that, you know, you're creatures of habit. What you tend to buy the first time, you'll stick with when you have a good experience. I guess that's true as far as advertising. Last spring, a wheel in 2013 blue Honda threw a weight, causing a vibration from 65 to 70. Problem resolved when the weight was replaced. Driverless cars. I like Steve's perspective on this. Ron, who's going to work on them? You will be ready if you choose to, but what about the guys who just throw parts at cars? Paying unemployment for those displaced by driverless cars? You know, you got to think about that, right? All the mechanics that say, hey, I'm not going to work on a driverless car. I'm just going to go on unemployment. I'm just going to retire. And he says, what's the government going to do? No sweat. They'll just print more money. Count on it. We're only $20 trillion in debt, so what's the real problem? You know, Steve, he rambles, but he rambles in the right direction. He's got good marks. He needs a radio show of his own. And I don't know. I'd love to see that. Steve Rosenthal, Virginia, thanks for the comments and thoughts. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.